3. Good, good day in the jungle. Two great hours. And why do I say that? We had Greg Marshall back in from Wichita State. We had Raheem Mostert, 49ers running back. Blake Martinez. So three excellent interviews. Vic in NoCal did this unbelievable satire and impersonation of, quote, Mutt from L.A. You know how good that was? I can tell you how good that was. And hopefully this guy would not have a problem with me referencing it. But Mutt in L.A. was so good that a former NFL MVP DM'd me. And the DM reads, Mutt in L.A., crying emoji. No names mentioned, Boomer Esiason. God, I love Boomer. I love Boomer, and you clones love Boomer, and for good reason. Boomer knows the show. Even he thought that was awesome.
Ladies, mujeres, if you're mesmerized by the menagerie of man candy and the Mutt in L.A. montage, then holla at your boy. You know where to find me. Down on my knees, neck deep in some toilet I'm having to unclog because some Delta Bravo frat boy jammed a big old turd in the pipes.
The reason I... Slungpoo? Louis Slungpoo? The reason I mention Boomer is, like, Boomer is a former NFL MVP. Boomer is an icon and a legend, amazing athlete, and again, a former NFL MVP. That says it all. But to me, and the reason I love Boomer and respect him so much, man, he is a show guy. He understands shows. He understands hosting shows, doing shows. He understands how important it is to give them a show. He understands that kind of content. So if Boomer's going to thumb out even something as quick as that, Mutt in L.A., crying emoji, you know it's good content. A former NFL MVP is in on his own. Boomer. 1-800-636-8686. Right, so really quickly, you've probably heard this a million times between last Sunday and right now, but it doesn't make it any less weird or surprising or bizarre. So let me say this one more time, just in case anybody might have forgotten. The Patriots are playing tomorrow. I repeat, the New England Patriots are playing tomorrow in the wild card round for the first time in a decade. And the only thing more bizarre than them playing tomorrow is the reason they're playing tomorrow, is why they're playing tomorrow. They're playing tomorrow because Bill Belichick, his clone son, and Thomas Edward the Great could not handle Ryan Fitzpatrick and the Dolphins at home in December with a first-round bye hanging in the balance. Like that cliche, any given Sunday is a nod to the fact that anything can happen at any time on any football field on any Sunday. But it's also shorthand for any given Sunday, except Sunday, in New England in December. Because in a league where nothing is certain, the Patriots winning at home in December is a stone-cold lock. Except for this past Sunday, when Brady and the Hood could not get over the allegedly tanking Dolphins and their birthday cake-loving, Rubik's Cube-spinning, journeyman quarterback. And did you know Homeslice went to Harvard? And instead of spending a bye week in the film room, getting right mentally, healing up physically, instead, they've got to lace them up and play for their postseason lives just to get to a round that was gifted to them before they gagged it all away against the Dolphins. Against the Dolphins. So there's limping into the playoffs, and then there's what the Pats just did. And now the questions are being asked that we thought would never be asked. Like, is Tom Brady thinking about the possibility of this being his very last home game in New England? And his answer was exactly what you'd expect, about how he's focused on the Titans and nothing else. The fact of the matter is, this might be his final game ever in Foxborough. It's not what he's saying, of course. He's saying things like, I'll reflect on my time in the league when it's time and it's over and I'm sitting out on my porch, blah, blah, blah. Except it's not his answer that's important. It's the fact that he's even getting that question right now. Dude should be at home, crushing tape from his couch, not in front of his locker, getting ready for a game because he and they could not handle the Dolphins. Brady also said he has not turned on the tube this week because, quote, it's probably best not to turn on the TV after we lose, end quote. Damn, Tommy. The Mitch Trubisky in you is strong. As for the hood, he got the same question about possibly coaching Brady for the very last time. And again, it is a possibility. His answer, just as predictable as you'd expect.
Bill, with all the history that you and Tom have, is it strange to think that it's at least possible this could be your last game together?
Yeah, we're focused on the Titans. That's really, that's all I'm focused on. So do everything we can to get ready to go and play the best game we can play Saturday night,
whenever they're playing that game, we'll be ready. I'm not really focused on that guy. You know, next question. These questions were going to come at some point, right? But they're earlier than anybody expected, a week earlier. And now the hood has to game plan for a quarterback that he thought he ran out of the league. Of course, I'm talking about Ryan freaking Tannehill. And if you want the juiciest storyline of the weekend, look no further than Tannehill getting his first ever playoff start and getting it against a team that single-handedly kept him out of the dance from 2012 to 2018. And here's a sentence that I can't believe I'm about to say. But Ryan Tannehill, like at this given time, at this point in time, may in fact be the better quarterback on the field tomorrow in New England. Yeah, I know. What did I just say? What did I just say? Have I lost my mind? I mean, no, if you want to look at it statistically, I haven't. Tanny has got the higher QBR, the higher passer rating, the higher completion percentage, the higher yards per attempt. And he's thrown for only two less TDs in six less games started. So there's that. Then there's the fact that Brady is having his worst statistical year since 06 across the board. And yes, I'm fully aware that he does not have the weapons he used to have. I'm fully aware that Gronk is not there. I'm fully aware that Julian Edelman is all banged up. I'm fully aware that nobody else on the outside can get consistent separation. I know this. I understand this. I understand it's got an impact on his production. Except his numbers are down. He does not look like the same guy. And we'll see what happens. All of this is going to be true on Saturday because Gronk ain't walking through that door. Neither is Antonio Brown. Julian Edelman is not at 100%. And if you erase him, Brady's got nobody else he can trust or count on consistently. This offense has not been this bad since 08. And it's not like they're going to fix it overnight, especially without a bye. And no, I'm not stupid enough to bury the hood or Brady before they're dead and cold. I've made that mistake. So don't go looking for me to come in here and pick against them. But I am smart enough to tell you that nothing this year has shown the Patriots to be anywhere near the same team they've been in the past. Not the same team as they were last year. Not the same team they were 2 years before when they also went to the Super Bowl. And the most repeated stat that you're going to hear the entire postseason is the Pats have not won the Super Bowl when they've had to play in the wild card round. So losing that game against the Dolphins was not just huge. Historically speaking, it would demonstrate that it was actually their Super Bowl. Because even if they do beat the Titans tomorrow, the road to Miami does not go through Foxborough. They would have to have so many things happen for it to go through Foxborough. And they've already lost to the Ravens. They've already lost to the Chiefs. They've already lost to the Texans this season. So, if you're picking them right now, you're picking them because you think they can throw the switch. And I'm here to tell you that group can't. Or you're picking them based on what they've done in the past. I get that. I understand that. Again, I'm not dumb enough to pronounce them dead until there is no pulse. And as long as the hood and Brady are there, they've got a pulse. They've got a shot. But there's no getting around the fact that they're starting their journey to a seventh ring 1 week before they should have. And every team left after this weekend is a better team they've already lost to. The dynasty might not be over, but their dominance sure as hell is. They're not what they were. Who you got? That spread is interesting. Is that -5.5? It's 5. Hey, listen, I'm not a guy. I don't do this with you. I'm not a guy to break down games and pick against the spread. Although I do dabble. And then James Kelly's a straight degenerate. If I'm looking at the Pats and Titans, Pats minus five, I could see taking the Titans plus five. I don't necessarily think they'll win, but I absolutely could see them keeping it within five. Who you got? I'll tell you what this is going to come down to. You know Bill Belichick. It does not take a genius to know that what Belichick does best, he takes your best weapon and takes it away from you. They're going to try and take Derrick Henry away from the Titans, obviously, and then make Ryan Tannehill beat them. Be careful what you wish for. Tannehill has played great since he took over. And I know they've never done jack. You know, that franchise has not won a game in there, in that state, since they were the Houston Oilers. They do not play well there. This is a different unit, and so are the Pats. So, I love the matchup. Stephon Gilmore coming off a bad game. I mean, what are the chances he has two bad games in a row? Gilmore v. A.J. Brown. I love that matchup. And they're going to make Tannehill beat them. And we'll see if he can. 1-800-636-8686. Who you got? Who you like? Let's go to Tucson. Dave in Tucson. It's good to have you, Dave. How are you?
Hey, Jim. How you doing? Listen, as you're doing your take, I'm thinking, wow, I like New England going in, and now you're taking me into another stratosphere. Because I tell you, those Titans look tight. They're going to key on Derrick Henry, you know, like you said. And then you got, you know, Tannehill to deal with. And like you said, you know, Titans never, or Tennessee, since they were used to never won up there. But look what's happened. This year, the Patriots, like every year, have two games to the Super Bowl, and now they're a little beat up. They really don't have the Gronks and the guys out there to throw to, like, even if they kept Antonio Brown. Edelman's hurt, and you got to take the points, I think, at Titans. Or, because I'm going to go to Laughlin this weekend, maybe Moneyline, and just pray Giselle gives, you know, Brady the old, like, take a timeout and go come back one more year. You know, I know she's listening. So, Giselle, if you're listening, listen to Jim Rome. Take some time off for Brady. Let him come back and go down on the sunset next year. Being a Jet fan, man, come on, Tennessee. Thanks for letting me talk to you, Jim.
My man, thanks for making that phone call, Dave. Good job. It's a good straight sports take. I like it. Even if it was exactly what I just said already. My man, it's all good, Dave. Appreciate you. I cannot stress this enough. Gronk ain't walking through that door. Gronk ain't walking through that door. Why do you think Tom Brady had Antonio Brown staying in his house with him? Why do you think Tom Brady was going to bat for Antonio Brown? He knows what he has, and he knows what he doesn't have. And by the way, they don't run the ball real effectively either. I think ultimately they find a way to grind out a really tough win. A really tough win. If I were a guy looking to get down, I'd take the points. Plus five. And to me, that says more about Tennessee. I like Tennessee. It's going to be a big Derrick Henry game, or they'll need him to have a really big game. And then if the hood does what he does and he makes Henry go away and they take that away from him, then it's all on Ryan Tannehill. That's something else I can't stress enough. There are two things I cannot stress enough. Number one, Gronk ain't walking through that door. Number two, they needed to beat Miami at the end of the regular season to get a bye. Nobody needs to tell the Patriots how critical that bye is. We know the numbers. We know how well they do when they have that bye. We know how much they've struggled without that bye. They knew what was at stake. That was not a meaningless game. They needed to beat Miami, of all teams, to get a bye, and they still couldn't do it. They had to beat Miami at home to get that bye, and they still could not do it. Miami. Man, they've got a lot more heart and a lot more grit and a lot less tank in them than we thought. And Brian Flores has done an amazing job there. Except that's a really bad roster. That is a roster deficient of talent, period. And the Patriots knew that, and they still couldn't beat Miami to lock in a bye? That's not a good sign at all. Hey, Jim, man, I felt like crap yesterday morning. It was as if somebody spiked my head into hundreds of little pieces. Regards, Steve Harvey.
Gronk spike, baby! Woo! This is called a Lego Harvey Gronk spike.
What are you doing? Are you serious? I don't want to work with him no more. Why is he here? Why are you here? What is wrong with you? You're mentally imbalanced.
That was Steve Harvey. And this email says, War Gronk acting like a complete ass on New Year's Eve. Salty Sarah. You know what I'm talking about, Sarah. Don't tell me you're not nervous, Sarah, about this weekend. Additionally, this email reads, Happy New Year, pimp. I'm glad Blake Martinez will have some jungle karma now. The Packers need all the help they can get. Rodgers continues to make insane throws, but the pressure to put the team on his back is gone. If New Orleans comes to Lambeau, the Packers' strong-as-hell defense and frozen tundra will slow Breeze down and win that game. Jabari Greer ain't walking through that door. Saints 24, Packers 28. War the mutt in L.A. walk-off.
War, it's Red Eisenhower riding to work in one of those old-school bicycles where the front wheel is all big and the back one is all tiny. Outro.
Seriously, if you didn't know what that call was, if you didn't know the context, and I dropped that soundbite, I'm guessing 100% of you would have thought that was Matt. Like, would you have any idea at all? If you didn't hear the setup.
I wish I could go on smacking No Gal Vic all day long, but aloha means a hola, as in, I got a whole lot of toilets to clean up.
It even brought this guy back. Tyler in Edmonton. Tyler in Shredmonton on Twitter. Quote, best bleep I've heard and seen in a long time. He's talking about Vic in L.A. doing his mutt in L.A. Or Vic in NoCal, I should say, doing his mutt in L.A. impersonation. And the montage on CBS Sports Network even brought Tyler out. PJ in the Mile High tweets, that was so good. I honestly had no clue that that was a fake Matt until the very end. Bleeping hilarious. This is what I'm saying. In fact, a lot of you who thought it was Matt who tuned out missed an amazing call because it wasn't Matt. It was Mud. Hey, Jim, if that was Vic and NoCal impersonating Mud in L.A., that was the greatest call to the jungle I have heard in my 25 years of listening to your show. The voice was spot on. How the hell did he do that? Craig in Sacramento. Dude, Vic is good like that. You know he's giving a run for his money is my man, Jeff in Southfield. Remember, Jeff in Southfield had done Fake John in New York. But that's Vic doing mutt. Hey, Rome, nothing wrong with telling people your dreams. Signed, people that make you sit through an 8-minute YouTube video while they keep insisting the best part's coming up. Lee in Vancouver. That's how I felt last night making my family watch the Chris Beard special. They're trying not to look at their phones. I'm like, hey, Junior, that's your old man who's on TV who worked pretty hard that weekend, man. Look at the screen. Even the cat is watching. Rome, I don't have any dreams either. Sincerely, community college students. Hey, don't be cracking them on those that are going into the 13th grade. Hawk. Damasio in Albuquerque. Romy, after we lost our family cat a few months ago, I saw you post a pic of Cody on Instagram. We were never entirely sure of our cat's breed since we adopted from the Humane Society. Wife and I did some research on ragdolls and agreed that the temperament and appearance of ragdolls were similar to our last cat. Took some time looking around, but eventually we adopted a pair and the family could not be happier. However, I've got one bone to pick with you. You didn't mention I would need to stroke a large check for those cats. Paulie and Indy, unwarned people will ask you to not let them forget to do something later. Bro, I wasn't encouraging you to get a ragdoll. I just said I had a ragdoll. Oh, yeah, they cost. Dude, that's an expensive breed of cat. Really expensive. So really quickly, in terms of the cost. So we had, Janet had a cat before she and I met. And this cat lived to be like nearly 20. Alley cat. Man, I loved her. She's my best friend, this cat. So one day when she was about to stroke out, we know we got to get her to the vet. And it's bad. I'd like been dreading this day forever. Like once, way back in the day, the cat jumped off the washing machine and hurt her back legs and was dragging them on the floor. It was like the saddest thing I'd ever seen in my life. Like she was paralyzed. And I took her to the vet and I'm like, yo, dude, doc, I literally do not care what it costs. Fix this cat. I literally do not care what it costs. This cat literally is my best friend. Fix the freaking cat. I don't care what it takes. I'll fly that cat to Paris for experimental feline surgery. Let's spin some blood for that cat, man. Whatever it takes. And he gave her a cortisone shot. Like tightened her up. I don't know, a little kitty Toradol or something. Whatever it was. I'm like, how long is that going to last? He goes, maybe a month. Maybe. And for years, she was fine. It was great. But then she died. And when she died, we go to the vet. And I'm like, is this it, doc? He's like, I'm afraid this is it, Jim. Would you like to be here? I'm like, hell yeah, I'm going to be there for it. So I sat there in the vet's office. Poor thing got the needle. That was that. I was with her in her last dying moment. She was my best friend. I said, Janet, do you want to be here? She's like, oh, hell no. I'm not going in there for that. I'm like, I'm not leaving that cat's side. I'm there. So point of the story is we had to find another cat. And we found this ragdoll cat in the pet store. Not to be this guy, but since he mentioned it, you didn't tell me I had to stroke a check. The cat was like $800. Really expensive. I go away on a break. I come back. I'm in love with the new cat. I'm like, Janet, how's the cat? How's Max? How's Max? She's like, he's fine anyway. How's your day? I'm like, my day's fine. How's the cat? What's up with the cat? I'm going to come home and see the cat. How'd the show go? Oh, holy crap. What's wrong with the cat? The cat's not here. We sent the cat to get a wash with some mobile. Now, it wasn't even that. Like, the cat was in a cat hotel while we were gone. They tried to wash the cat, and it stroked out and dropped dead. And so we go back. Now we're really conflicted. So we go to the pet store. I'm like, dude, we got a problem here. This cat was only 6 weeks old. It was $800. He just died. They're like, your problem, bro. I'm like, my problem? This is getting really ugly now. Really ugly. So we found Cody the ragdoll cat from a breeder. And 10 years later, he's still a boss. He's had some issues now physically. All right, so the point of that story is, if you want a ragdoll cat, they're amazing. They're amazing. They're really expensive. They cost crazy cash. James Kelly's like, dude, are you kidding me? You just went 10 minutes over a cat story? Who are you, Rome Hawk? What can I tell you, man? Cody the ragdoll cat. This guy saw a picture of Cody on my Instagram feed and went out and bought a ragdoll or plural ragdolls. Dude, they're awesome cats. But not better than Sapphire the cat, who was free because he's a rescue cat. All right, I got to get out. Stay tuned. There's Mutt. He wants to respond. He's on hold. Stay tuned. Phone call's coming up.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Just know that going in. 1-800-636-8686. All right. He does deserve a chance to respond. Vic in NoCal called up as Mutt in L.A. because he wanted to clown this guy. Let's go to L.A. Matt in L.A. What's up, Matt?
Romy Rome from Gardena to Guadalajara. Thanks for the vine. In conjunction with the blowtorch that is CBS Sportsnet, I want to officially welcome you to the year of the rat. Rod Stewart. Babs Walter. 2020 is upon us, pimp. And it seems that, hey, but unlike these other beats that I've had recently with the B.I. Sleaze, who still is on his game, albeit steadily polishing more helmet than a motorcycle shop worker, the beef with Unethical, who, although he's nothing more than a greasy-faced casino cooler, stays on Twitter in the jungle year-round. They say that imitation is the highest form of flattery. The don't flatter me, victim. You're a pastest prime, weak sauce, sprinkling worm of a caller. My man Jay Moore body bagged you more than a decade ago, you chump. You ghost in and out of this here jungle and on Twitter like the sackless San Franciscan bitch that you are. although you reside in Mexico. So tell me how that is, bro. How you repping NoCal from Mexico? Yo, Victoria, keep my name out your mouth. Stick to stealing everybody's stuff. Stick to writing your damn calls on a computer screen, you unimpressive, unoriginal, unfunny, soft as cotton candy kook underling. Your impressions are worse than your phone calls, Vic. And the next time you come at me, I'm a curb stomp you off those 18-inch high Mexicali curbs that you frequent, you chiclet peddling peasant. So yo vanished from NoCal. Keep it coming, fool, because I got smacked for days, you powder puff paisa. Wore Belly Clarkson taking a Philly cheesesteak and buffalo wings platter to the neck daily and twice this Sunday. Wore James Kelly's dormer vent dome piece and Romex wire arms. Unwore the band on Mike in Buffalo. He's not hurting him, he's helping him, man, and you need to put him on the radio, pimp. Outro.
You tell me what's better, Matt in L.A. or Mutt in L.A.? If I were to play you Mutt in L.A., would you even know that it wasn't Matt in L.A.? And the answer is no, because when I did have that call, most of you thought that it was just Matt being Matt. All right, that's the official response. Where'd he come out?
I wish I could go on smacking No Gal Vic all day long, but aloha means a hola, as in, I got a whole lot of toilets to clean up.
Outro. When we come back, last segment of the show, stay on it. We're not done yet. I want to talk about Alex Caruso, one of the leading vote-getters in the West for the NBA All-Star Game. Also, I want to give you a quick preview of Podcast 110, Episode 110, I should say, of the Jim Rome Podcast. Really different and really cool. That's coming up. Huge call at the end of the program. I've got an ATP, Adam Hawk. ATP. Here is your bottom of the hour sports update. Rich Ackerman's got this. Time to answer your Ask the Pros question, where you get to submit a question to me at cbssportsradio.com/askthepros. And, of course, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. ATP. Hi, Jim. All we want to know is how many shots Logan tried to get you to buy him at the Rose Bowl. That's my ATP. Wore dryuary lasting 24 hours. Wore lady clones. Who do you think sent that? If dryuary lasted 24 hours, and she's asking how many shots my 15-year-old son tried to get, who do you think sent that? Bella B, of course. Logan was on his best behavior. He did not try even once, Bella. But then again, we were on our best behavior. Janet and I each had a single 805 for the game. It was good, though. 805. So Logan did not try. Not there. He will try again. And he got virtually every olive that I soaked over the vacation. All right, so really quickly. Episode 110 of the Jim Rome Podcast dropped yesterday. And this week, my guest is New York Times bestselling author and music critic Bob Mayer. Now, off the top, let me say this. This is another example of how the side hustle works and allows me to have conversations that simply would not work on this show. So if you're a fan of rock and roll or a fan of a really good story about a damn good band, this is the episode that is guaranteed to deliver. Do not tune me out. Just follow me on this. Bob Mayer wrote the definitive book on what is probably my favorite band ever, The Replacements. And it's a band that we've got some history with, if you know this show, and you know me. I would not have this guy on just so we could geek out. I had him on because The Replacements are an all-time enigma. A revolutionary band, a band that influenced many of the best acts of the day that followed them. A band that was supposed to be the next big thing in this country. A band that went from indie status to an enormous deal with Warner Brothers Records. But it never actually happened. they never actually blew up the way they were supposed to. And then they had to sit back and see many of the others that they influenced blow right by them. Then again, the replacements, or the Mats, as they're affectionately known to their diehard fans, were not like any other band. Who else shows up blasted and then gets banned from Saturday Night Live? They're the only band I know of that that happened to. And as Bob Merritt tells it, the fact that they never did blow up to the levels expected of them only makes them that much more fascinating and that much more intriguing.
Their impact probably far outstrips what their actual commercial sales were. They were kind of the proverbial sort of the band that could have made it but didn't. And yet at the same time, you know, their impact and their legacy has really kind of grown almost in their absence. They existed for about 12 years in the 80s, started in 79, broke up in 91, so really were an 80s band. Put out 8 records in that time, half were indie label records, half were on Warner Brothers, and mostly were critics' darlings, were a big college band, were part of the American indie scene. But really, they were the band that was tipped to be the next big American rock and roll band, the next Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, the next, you know, whoever. And they sort of fell short, and yet in that sort of falling short, they became bigger than they were in these last 30 years since they split up. They've kind of became legends without ever really becoming stars.
All right, so I became a big-time fan of that band in real time when they were still touring and putting out records on the regular in the 80s. I can still remember seeing them in downtown Los Angeles one night at the Variety Arts Center back in 87. And part of what made them so amazing was their live act, their live shows. It was totally unpredictable. And the fact that no one show was ever like any of the other shows. And a lot of the chaos on stage was rooted in booze and a punk rock attitude from brilliant frontman Paul Westerberg. He picked up a lot of that from his first exposure to the Sex Pistols.
This is a band that, you know, they started very young. I mean, the youngest member, Tommy Stinson, he was 12, 13 years old when they first got on stage, and the rest of the guys were, you know, barely out of their teens, 17, 18, 19. And early on, you know, they were nervous. They were trying to get on stage, and booze sort of steeled their nerves. And then eventually, after a few years, it became part of the performance and presentation. Some of it was, like I say, just to give them the gumption to get on stage and play. And then some of it became part of this circus that they were kind of putting on. And, you know, through those years, 83, 84, the Let It Be era, the Tim era, which was kind of their college rock peak, people were coming out to see this high wire act. You know, it was always this thing of, what are the Replacements going to do next?
Remember, they showed up blasted on Saturday Night Live and got banned from the show. So what makes the story of the Replacements so interesting is the fact that they never did achieve that level of stardom and the recognition that they should have had. A lot of that is because they refuse to be the kind of band that conform to conventional commercial marketability. And even though that did not help record sales, it sure as hell helped influence and define a ton of other more well-known artists that came after them.
Even though their record sales never kind of reached that superstar level, in terms of the way other musicians and other bands regarded them, it was huge. And then going on, as you see the band's influence, I think really starts coming up in the early 90s and mid-90s. And the thing about the Replacements, because they weren't any one kind of band, they influenced a lot of different kinds of bands. So you look at like the early Replacements records like Sorry Ma, I Forgot to Take Out the Trash and Stink, that kind of snotty, smart, bubblegum kind of pop punk, that had a huge influence on Billy Joe from Green Day, who's an absolute Westerberg, you know, student and follower, and really kind of took a lot of cues from him. And then you look at like the ballad kind of adult pop side of Westerberg, that was a blueprint that like the Goo Goo Dolls took and sold millions and millions of records with. And even bands like Wilco and Jeff Tweedy, I mean, he talked about learning how to write songs by listening to Westerberg. So it's not so much that they had this kind of one pervasive influence, but the influence of all their different sounds and styles kind of crops up in these different kinds of bands over the years.
Bob Mayer, music critic, author, part of the podcast. He is the podcast, Ep 110. You know, to this day, you can hear the Replacements' influence in huge acts like Wilco, Green Day, who were total mainstream successes and still tour around the world. Mayer told me that Paul Westerberg actually had to seek professional help because of this, because he was seeing so many bands he influenced get rich and famous off his sound, and he never got to the same level, despite being a legend, to guys like Billy Joe and Jeff Tweedy.
And he's at his shrink's office trying to explain to the shrink, like, this band sounds like me, and that band sounds like me, and this other band sounds like me. And the shrink's sort of looking at him like he's crazy, thinking he's like some deranged person. And it wasn't until the guy looked up on the internet and realized, oh, you're sort of telling the truth here. You influenced something you never really got to enjoy yourself. You know, some people are built for that kind of success. And I think Westerberg and the Replacements were built for a different kind of success, which was more about their influence and their legacy and being discovered not in the moment necessarily, but over time.
All right, so something many of you longtime Jungle listeners may remember is the time that Westerberg famously stiffed this show. It was back in May of 06, 14 years ago. I'd been hyping and promoting the interview for a few days because I love the guy, he was my guy, and they were going to debut a new track on the show, but Westerberg never did call in. He was set to, but he never did. Classic Westerberg behavior, and if you ask Bob Mayer, he still remembers that flake job, and he shared his thoughts.
As I always say, you know, you can't take anything personal with Paul because, you know, you'd be offended all the time. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, you know, he did make it on, I suppose. And I was joking with my buddy Jason Elzy over at Rhino Records. He still tells me he has PTSD from the whole experience of trying to do the PR for that.
So in fairness to Westerberg, he did come on the show 5 months later in October of 04. He made good with a very good 15-minute interview, which I still appreciate to this day.
I am a knucklehead. I mean, I'm able to be responsible when I have to when it comes to my son. But other than that, you know, I make stupid mistakes every day. Yesterday at the soccer game, I yelled at the coach and told them to shut up and go to hell. And I was then asked to, like, go move farther away from the field. Can take the garage singer out of the garage, but whatever.
Paul, that was great. I really had been looking forward to that, and I really enjoyed that. I'm glad you made time. Really good to have you on the show.
Thanks very much, Jim. I appreciate it.
Forgot how good that moment was, actually. So all's well that ends well, even if he never showed up for a make-good, I would still love him and the band. I mean, no doubt. I mean, I loved him for pulling all that rock star crap. Who am I to get butthurt when he pulled that rock star crap on me? So good. Make sure you check out this podcast because it's a really good one. A ton of great stories in there, including the time that Paul Westerberg met Prince in their home state of Minneapolis and the words and thoughts they exchanged in a men's room at a show. So look for that. Episode 110 of the Jim Rome Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, jimrome.com, and pinned right to the top of the Twitter page right now. At True to Vert tweets, all I got out of Matt in LA's call is that he's rattled. Warm mutt. The CEO is in. CEO in SoCal. Victor 1, Matt 0. At the Mianopan tweets, Matt, more incoherent than ever. Paulie and Indy, yikes. That crackback made Vic's call even better. Maybe Matt should have Mutt write his calls for him. Just about out of time. Huge call today brought to you by Capital One. Eno, the Capital One assistant, which catches things that might look wrong with your credit card, sends you an alert to your phone, and helps you fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not, what's in your wallet. See CapitalOne.com for details.
You superfluous, smack-deficient Sasquatch. What you pulled the other day was the equivalent of asking for PC when you're in prison. Now I know your charming soft chump ass is not familiar with the CCC, the Clink Code of Conduct, but I am, because I've done my time, homie, and asking for PC means you ask for protected custody. It means you're a bitch. You got that, you supercalifragilistic, supercilious scoundrel. You don't want none of Mutt and LA's fight, homie. I wear a name tag.
There you go. Mutt in L.A. with a huge call. My thanks to Blake Martinez, Raheem Mostert, Greg Marshall, James.